From Sundress Media Productions, this is Spectrum 360. Welcome. Your Spectrum 360 host is Mark Skogman. Spectrum 360 broadcasts live weekly on Mondays at 11 p.m. and online anytime via podcast. Thank you for listening for the next hour. Spectrum 360 is progressive and features political talk and humor and also the arts and popular culture. Spectrum 360 starts right now. Let's get to work.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Any one of you who feels cynical, just consider where we have been.
You want the truth, you should seek it out for yourself. That's what they're afraid of. You.
This is information the world needs to know.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
Thank you. Bless you. This is the end of the meeting. It's the beginning of the movement. Thank you. Woo!
Yeah. Hello.
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 Hello. Hello. Hello. Hello.
Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
That's right, folks. Don't touch that dial.
Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360.
From the white sand beaches and sun and piña coladas and palm trees in the beautiful and tropical Tampa Bay area in the state of Florida on the eastern coast of the Gulf of Mexico.
Got the sun on my shoulders and my toes in the sand, just dreaming, sitting.
This is the radio program Spectrum 360 for Monday, the 1st of December, 2014.
You have an incoming transmission.
Not be televised.
The voice of news information has
the purpose of this program is to bring vital news.
I'm your host, Mark Skogman.
You imbecile! You bloated idiot!
What?
He is the most interesting man in the world.
You're so ugly you could be a modern art masterpiece.
I beg your pardon. With associate producer and occasional co-host Terry Weeks. On Spectrum 360 in this edition, live via telephone, an interview with Bobby Seale, the longtime political activist and organizer since the 1960s and founding member of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. Again, that was the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. That's a very important phrase to include. That's the original name of the Black Panther Party. Yes. And this Spectrum 360 program will be focused on my interview with Bobby Seale for the entire hour. Our longtime Spectrum 360 listeners will note that Spectrum 360 tends to do longer, in-depth interviews during the last couple of months of the year during the holiday season. That's going to be true this year as well. And this is a Spectrum 360 exclusive interview. Keep listening. Yes. On next week's Spectrum 360 program, recorded coverage from the events in the state capital of Florida, in Tallahassee, as the campaign reform political activist 81-year-old Ronna Bazzini arrives in Tallahassee to complete her walk for campaign reform this coming Wednesday, just in 2 days, the 3rd of December, 2014. Ronna Bazzini started working, or rather walking. Well, it is working too. But she started walking in October of this year from Sarasota, Florida, over 200 miles to Tallahassee to publicize her effort for campaign finance reform. Corporations are not people, and money is not speech. Got it? Her website is www.ingrannydfootsteps.com. Wow. This will be great. Yes. And we will cover all the events related to the walk on the next Spectrum 360, as well as ongoing Ferguson and Michael Bowne related demonstrations, as there has been for the last entire week, and also the fast food workers strike and more. Stay tuned and check the Spectrum 360 Facebook website for more information. And also check out our website on Vimeo to see the video of the start of the Moral Mondays Florida St. Petersburg event in Williams Park on Monday, the 27th of October, 2014. The introduction to the events is posted, featuring moderator Shanna Smith's opening comments. This is the same event that was covered on the D It Happened on Spectrum 360, with a first ever 2-hour special program featuring a lot of coverage of Moral Mondays. You can find the video on Vimeo.com. You can search with my name. My name is Mark Skogman. Of course, I'm the host of Spectrum 360. My last name is spelled capital S K-O-G-M-A-N. You can search, go to video Vimeo.com and search with that name, or you can search for user and get this 213-65787. It's a lot easier to use my name, isn't it? Again, that's user 213-65787. That's on Vimeo. There will be a lot more Moral Mondays videos posted over the next week. And after that, there will be videos posted of the March Against Corruption. That's also from Saturday, the 1st of November, 2014 as well. So lots of videos coming onto the Vimeo website from Spectrum 360. And of course, next week, Ronna Bazzini from the capital of the state of Florida, Tallahassee. She has walked over 200 miles for campaign finance reform. Wow, that's all I've got to say. And she's basically imitating Granny D, who famously walked all across the country for campaign finance reform. And we actually tried to get her to do that, but she staunchly refused to walk all the way across the country. She was just going to walk from Sarasota to Tallahassee. And she's 81 years old, so she's doing great. What a wonderful effort at campaign finance reform by an octogenarian. She's a great lady. Okay. I'm going to play a couple of brief segments here to set up our interview with Bobby Seale, and then we're going to go right to Bobby. I want to set the stage here a little bit for what is happening, or what happened in the 60s, and what is happening now in terms of Ferguson, the Michael Bowne case, and the grand jury decision in Ferguson. Let's listen to just a little bit of related music here and see if this fits.
America was stunned on May 4th, 1970, when Riley turned a riot up at Kent State University. They said the students scared the guard, though the troops were battle-dressed.
the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Wow. Well, that was a little montage of music, and you also heard Mario Savio there from the 60s, from the Berkeley Free Speech Movement. So that gives us a little flavor of what the 60s was like, and I believe it's actually applicable to what's happening right now in Ferguson. And I want to welcome to the program Bobby Seale, political activist and community organizer, and also a founding member of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. Welcome to the program, Bobby Seale.
Hello, hello, thank you.
Great. It's great to have you on the program, sir. It's an honor and a pleasure. I'm so interested in the history that you lived, and so great to have you on the program tonight. So thank you very much for being here. And we also have with us, joining with us, associate producer and occasional co-host, Terry Weeks.
Hello, great to be here.
Okay,
hello,
very good. Bobby, I'd like to start asking you a few questions. I have a few questions I want to cover in this hour. And the very first one is last week on this program, exactly a week ago, we were watching the news about the grand jury decision from Ferguson, the Ferguson grand jury. And we were here in the studio as the demonstration started to happen, as violence started to happen, right here in the studio on the air, which is, well, very good timing for a news program. This is a weekly program. So sometimes, you know, if news happens on Tuesday, we got to wait till the next Monday to talk about it. But boy, it was very prescient that we were on the air. And then Monday night, the decision was announced, and we've had a week of demonstrations and unrest and traffic disruptions and some violence as well over the last week, and it's continuing. I'd like your opinion on what happened in Ferguson and what's happening now across the country. Give us your perspective on that, because you've got to be one of the people that has one of the best perspectives in the country about what's happening now.
Well, the what's happening now is just a slowed down reaction to this police officer not being indicted, you know.
Yes.
But more important, I'm hoping, and that people, others who are doing the real organizing, the real peaceful protest organizing, are also trying to look at how they truly changed the situation, you know.
Yes, yes.
And that's important. So back in my day, I started the Black Panther Party in 1966. Of course, we were observing police for 7 months until they made a law to stop us from doing that. And then...
Now, you were actually 20 years old when you started the Black Panther.
Oh, no, I was 30 years old.
30, excuse me. I was 30
years of age.
Oh, that's right. You're right.
I have a whole full-level work experience up to that time. Now, Huey Newton was closer to 20 years old.
Yes.
I'm much older than Huey Newton. But when that event, things happened there, when I led that armed delegation to the California State Legislature to read our executive mandate number one, Black Panther Party's executive mandate number one, in opposition to the Mulford Act, they were trying to put a law in to stop us from carrying loaded weapons. Because, see, our guns were legal, you know.
Yes,
we
they were.
We carried loaded weapons, law books, and tape recorders with us, and we stood a reasonable distance away according to law at that time in California. And we observed police, you know, and that was because not only because there was rampant police brutality and murder of black people in the black community, but even the protest movement people in the community was in San Francisco, Berkeley, what have you, et cetera. They began to attack, beat, kill peaceful protesters, exercising their First Amendment right to do so at that time. So it was all the stuff that caused me to really evolve and put that organization together. And most people don't even know it, but I was employed by the city government at the time I created the Black Panther Party.
Yes, I do know that.
Okay, so I'm just saying it was another time. But in creating the party, what I wanted to do was organize a broad national organization in many cities, especially beginning with all the African-American communities, and put an organization there so that we could begin to really have a real political party where ultimately we run for political offices and coalesce with other progressive politicians.
As a third party you wanted to run?
We were running as a third
running
party.
As a third party.
And we also coalesced with the Peace and Freedom Party, mm-hmm. which is a young white left radicals that grew up out of the University of California Berkeley protest movement.
Yes, that's right.
You see, so we were really about that. And the coalition politics, see, we crossed all racial lines. We crossed all ethnic lines and religious and group lines, from liberals to whoever, et cetera, and other black organizations who were progressive enough, including SCLC. We had a working coalition with Dr. Martin Luther King's organization. I set that up. My point is that we needed political power seats. In other words, people had been running around there for a couple of years talking about black power, black power, black power. And that's just sloganizing, you know what I mean?
It wasn't black political power.
Yeah. For me, I wanted the power seats. You have to have the power seats to have any power.
Yes.
I agree with you. I think that's one of the mistakes that the Occupy movement made. We don't want to get involved in the political system. We're going to just be out here and do our own thing. And
you're very right. They made that, and some other organizations continue to try to do that. But you have to go after those political power seats, even especially on the local community level. And that's the way... where you can win.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just recently here, right here in Richmond, California, I mean, this is Chevron Oil, that big money. They poured money in to try to get all the political seats taken over in the city government of Richmond, including the mayor's seat.
And they lost.
And the people, Chevron lost.
They did. I'm aware of that. That's a great story.
That was a great victory for the people.
From the last general election.
The people kept those seats because if they take away, I mean, it's just that that whole big corporate framework is going to run every damn thing. So if the people don't have it. So my tactic in the 1960s was this. We will go out here and patrol these police. By patrolling and observing these police, we're going to capture the imagination of the people, which is going to get them to come to our office. When they come to our office, I'm going to teach them how we're going to organize the people and organize the political electoral power, how we're going to organize and unify the voters. We got to register people to vote, organize people to vote, so we can take over some city council seats and change some of the racist and exploitation laws that exist in the city charter. You see what I'm getting at? So
yes,
you can't talk power, whether it's people's power, black power, red power, whatever power, in terms of how you want to change things unless you get a hold of some of the political power seats. And a lot of people who try to ignore that and think they can, we're outside of the system. Oh, you're outside. How can you be outside of something that's oppressing you, that's kicking you in your butt every day in one way, shape, fashion, mm-hmm. form, or another?
Well, you're not effectively
you're not
fighting
it. Right. So that's what's got to happen. And when I look at Ferguson, you see what I mean? The population of this small town, et cetera, the lack of African-American people even being progressive. I have to say progressive because that's why I'm after. I don't know, in the final analysis, it's above and beyond color. How progressive are you in terms of what your politics is about when it comes down for evolving greater empowerment of the people? You know what I mean?
I want you to know that this program and this host and my co-host, we're very progressive. So you're on the right program.
Yes, I know. That's the kind of stuff that it takes. So it takes some organizing in Ferguson right now. They got to get out there. A lot of people, young people, and those young people out there, they got to participate just like the young people participated with me in the Black Panther Party years ago. You know what I mean? That's what we did.
And they do have to participate, and that is what a lot of us older folks are finding kind of frustrating. The younger people, they don't want. They say, "Oh, it's no good. None of it's any good. I don't want any part of it. I'm not going to vote. It doesn't matter anyway." And how do we engage these
mistake.
People today? I think it's a big mistake.
Yeah,
how do we engage them again?
You got it. I remember the times. I mean, when I ran people when they brought the model cities boards, and you had to be duly elected to those boards for those target community areas, you know, et cetera. In the over in Berkeley, California, where we had been well established for a few years, we took every seat and mm-hmm. we managed that money. We managed that money to get those money to those grassroots social programs, you know.
And some of this history is just remarkable, the successes you've had. And I think a lot of people in the general public are not aware of what the real program of the Black Panther Party for self-defense was and how successful you were at doing a lot of different things, including court cases where you've won all except one, I believe, from
well,
some accounts.
No, we won 95% of all of our courtroom cases through the era of the party and the arrests and those that went to trial. We won 95%.
Wow.
And we won 95% because we had one of the best network, legal network team of lawyers. And one of the groups that helped us put that together was none other than the NAACP. People don't know this. You see, so that's one aspect, you know. The breakfast program was a method that I put together, that the Free Breakfast for Children program. Now, yes, we need demonstrations. Yes, we need marches. Yes, we need speeches, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But what I added was programs, real programs that go to the heart of the issue. And then you're feeding the kids, you see what I mean? They're near the school. You got the church facilities. Then they was criticizing us. Okay, I got dietitians in there and all of this stuff, et cetera, boom, 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 boom. Free breakfast for children before they go to school in the poor and low-income communities. Stop. The program spread around the country. I mean, of course, by that time, I had party members all across the country and party chapters and branches. And I'm saying that program became popular. Now, what did the government hate most? It was not the fact that we had a few shotguns to defend ourselves if attacked. It was the breakfast program because we wound up with polls all across the country, how it evolved after that first semester breakfast program. The people in the community supported the Black Panther Party's idea of breakfast programs. Simultaneously, I created free preventative medical health clinics, free sickle cell anemia testing programs, and so on, et cetera. The breakfast program wound up with some of the black politicians understanding that they were fighting against who? The right-wing Republicans. So here's the Democrats over here, and so a couple of them was halfway progressive. They decided to put in a bill for the state of California, $5 million for all schools for free breakfast and free lunch for the people and the kids. They sent it to Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan vetoed $4 million of it. They brought it back, ran it back through the Assembly, ran it back through the California State Senate, and overrode Ronald Reagan's rejection and put the whole damn $5 million in. So that's a successful program in terms of causing the politics to put something in that's positive and relative. So that has to be done 101,000 times around the country.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
With programs and affecting the politics, but more importantly, getting people in on the political seats to evolve those programs. And those programs are going to cause upsets. Why? Because we're going to go against the avaricious corporate money rich who controls our political system, and we're going to have it controlled for the people to continually evolve legislations and policy that empower the people.
Yeah, you know? And it's so great because these are very needed programs. They're very practical. And people, you know, they don't associate those kind of programs, those practical programs and those very needed programs with the Black Panther Party. And yet this was part of your agenda. And that's what I think a lot of people don't realize because, you know, the Black Panthers have been stereotyped as being violent and militant. And people know little else about the history. And actually, there's so much positivity there. And that's what I admire. And I want to compliment you on that, because you started taking care of people's basic needs. And, you know, the reason I think they were afraid of that is because it was going to draw support to the Panther Party and it was going to increase their strength. And I think
let me show you. Now, you know, I'm doing a film, a major feature film. And we've been working on this thing for a couple of years, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But our research, all we call it, back in the day, at one point, the United States Senate, Senator Ted Kennedy and Senator Church, they put the FBI on the hot seat for attacking my Black Panther Party all across the country.
Yes, that was
they
the Church
the
Committee.
Hot seat for mm-hmm. 10, 12 Colin. Days. Out of, they, wait a minute. They subpoenaed from the FBI files. All files related to them attacking us. One of those memos that J. Edgar Hoover wrote out, he sent it to all 43 district offices of the FBI throughout the United States of America, telling their FBI that they had to do everything and anything to discredit and disrupt the idea of this Black Panther's Breakfast for Children program, he says. And he went on further to say, we want you to stop and slow down any white liberals from supporting this program, slow down and slow down any Black moderates from supporting this Breakfast for Children program. Now, that was, and then the man turned around and got on television and says the Black Panther's Breakfast for Children program is a threat to the internal security of America. This is
that's so ridiculous.
Feeding children, yeah.
Well, you know, we're facing the same kind of thing in Florida here right now, where in Fort Lauderdale, they're criminalizing the feeding of homeless people. And just on Revolutionary Road right before this program, Bruce Wright had a guest on that's talking about the fact that they're being arrested and harassed by the city of Fort Lauderdale for feeding homeless people. So, you know, this is not over. It's happening again.
Exactly. And it's important. See, you have to read. So the Occupy movement should have or people or somebody should have worked to try to get a few funds and stuff in just to create some relevant kind of program in the community while the Occupy movement was going. It's one thing to camp out and sit and boom, 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 and you're going to be there 10 days or 10 months. You see what I mean? But it's another thing to put a program up. Some of the youth out here back here 4 years ago, they went and leased some land. It was south of San Francisco, outside of San Francisco, but leased some land. I forget how many acres it was, but they built a gigantic community garden, and they actually sell the vegetables.
Yes.
Yeah, the community garden movement. And
half price or less to the community, regardless of what kind of economic status they are. But the idea, you see what I mean?
Yes.
We need to take this kind of thing here and proliferate it all across the country.
Well, you know, we're involved in that right now.
Okay, great.
I'm a permaculturist, as is Terry, and I took a permaculture design course about 3 or 4 years ago, and I grew up gardening and living off the land in northern Minnesota, of all places, where, you know, we lived in a very remote area. Well, now I live in the city and have for many years, and I've translated that, and that's exactly precisely what we're doing. We're working on sustainability. Well, we're working on our own agriculture, and I totally agree with that, because that, and we are doing it. There's a lot of people that are doing it. They don't get a lot of publicity. And just one quick point about the Occupy movement there, after the Occupy movement kind of stopped getting a lot of publicity, there are people that are working on programs. I know some people in Madison, Wisconsin, who started who associated with the Liberty Tree Foundation, who are doing programs like that. So they are taking practical action, but they don't get the publicity that the Occupy movement itself got, because they're not so public.
You know, the spirit and the meaning and everything behind the Occupy movement was good, but in effect, what happened is, next thing you know, after a couple of years of this, the FBI has put Occupy movement people on what they call a terrorist watch list.
Yes.
You see what I mean? So I'm just saying, people have to understand that. Same thing that J. Edgar Hoover was doing when
yes.
he said that the Black Panther Party's Breakfast for Children program was a threat to the internal security of America.
Yeah, this is so laughable, you know.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
But you've got to take that next step after the programs to then work your way into taking seats of political power.
And that's exactly what we was trying to do. And I ultimately ran for mayor of Oakland, and I took over the Model Cities Board seats out here in a couple of the cities there and we was running that money. And so the next step was going. So I went after Oakland, California specifically. One, we had a great research team, young people out of University of California and other people, grassroots in the community, et cetera. We centralized. We found we had the second largest containerized shipping port in the United States of America right in Oakland, California.
Wow.
So your central economic base, it was a key. You see what I'm getting at?
Yes.
Two. And then we had land areas, et cetera. So I came up, see, I'm an old architect and a builder and stuff like this. So I came up with the whole concept of an international cultural and trade center in Oakland, California, as it related to the Portlands, the airport, et cetera, and so on. The whole concept, you know what I mean? I mean, we put that together. It was one hell of a campaign. Now, the candidate who ran before me, who was progressive and African-American, he had never got any more than 14% of the vote. I got 42% of the vote. But my point is, between that and the next election, the party demised out, and that's for other kind of reasons I have to explain. But my point is, the objective was to get a hold of that city government, get a hold of them city council seats,
mm-hmm.
put us, the Peace and Freedom Party, and later, you know, there was the Green Party, but this is years later. I'm just saying that was the objective. You know, the Green Party is rooted in Richmond, California, where I was just talking earlier. You know what I mean? And that's very important.
And there's a socialist member, I think, of the, Seattle City Council now?
Yes, yes.
Okay, yeah, okay.
I met her up in at the Left Forum in New York City in May and June of this year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I remember her name is difficult to pronounce and it escapes me at this time, but she's great. And she was there at the Left Forum, spoke several times. Wonderful lady.
So I'm just saying that's where I was coming from Jump Street when I created the Black Panther Party. How do we evolve more community control, not only over the police, but we want to have a community control and community effect in terms of how the local economics go.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? My
yes.
concept said, okay, one of the things I got is I got a lot of support from some of the local businesses with the breakfast program. Safeway was the only one that went against us with the breakfast program, and they was across the street from the church where we had the breakfast program, so I boycotted them. So Lucky Stores,
good for you.
Okay, came along. Lucky Stores, a guy come, he says, I didn't like you when I first heard you say, but ever since I've been hearing about this program, come down here, I'll give you a couple of crates of eggs and a couple of crates of fruit for your breakfast program. I says, yeah, boom, boom, call him back. I says, every week, he says, yeah. I sent some party members down. I says, now remember you guys, be polite, et cetera, but we got a hold of that stuff, man. Next thing I know, I mean, I got 4 or 5 Lucky Stores. So we were circulating 40,000-50,000 Black Panther Party newspapers in the San Francisco Oakland Bay Area alone. So I ran ads in our newspaper that Lucky Stores, as opposed to Safeway Stores, well, we shut Safeway down. Was nobody was shopping at the
Oh, my gosh.
Store
That's
at
a
all.
Great story.
You know, and then the breakfast program spread across the country. I mean, the breakfast program spread beyond the Black Panther Party. I mean, that's really what happened. After California did their piece of legislation for $5 million for free breakfast and lunch, 28 state legislatures across the United States of America did something similar. You see?
Uh-huh.
So that's the success of that program in terms of the protest, social change, activist movement effort of that time. You see what I'm getting at?
Yes.
And as I say, it's got to be done with many different varied kinds of program,
mm-hmm.
1,000 or 10,001 times across the United States of America, and communities are everywhere, you know. In other words, you negate, you're trying to negate the avaricious exploitation that the corporate money rich does. You see what I mean? You're trying to evolve programs that are community-owned, community or more worker-owned companies. I think there's only about 1,500 or 1,600 worker-owned businesses in this country. You know what I mean? They're small, et cetera. But we need 100,000.
That is a really important model, yeah, worker-owned businesses.
We need 100,000 of those kinds of groups. And we have one out here, real vegetarian pizza, et cetera, in a yuppie-style community. It's like fully worker-owned, you know what I mean? They're their own CEO, you know what I mean? They don't need And this is the kind of stuff that has to be done 1,001 times so that, and we have to protect it because we need those political seats, you see what I mean, to protect those businesses so they can, types of community owned, community controlled business like that, so they can thrive in the community, you know,
right.
Provide the, yeah, you know, the, yeah.
When you're talking about local control, are you familiar with participatory budgeting?
I don't know. Tell me.
Well, you know, it's a movement. It's a movement where the people themselves make the budget for their community,
or at least a percentage of it.
Where is this at? I like to go.
Well, we're working on it. We need to get you together with some of these people that are working on it. We're working on it here in St. Petersburg. We started a project a few years ago called the People's Budget Review. And the initial idea was just to get people looking at the city budget and seeing where the money went, going to the budget hearings and having their say. It's moved from that to now they are trying to get on the ballot an initiative that would allow people to have complete control over a certain portion of city money. And that would be like a direct democracy. The people would be able to say, this is where we want that money to go.
I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
What I need to do is get people out there, young students and others, because I could teach them a lot. Everything from grassroots, demographic organizing, et cetera. The ground game that Obama used, I put that together in Oakland, California. I mean, we did the ground game something terrible, something more profound. But I'm just saying, that's what I do. I like to come to the colleges and universities, give a major speech, and if I got enough time for the next day, have a session, a real Q&A session, to explore and brainstorm to show students what they can do. What we did in the 60s and some of the stuff we did in the 60s is still applicable today.
Absolutely.
You know?
Oh, absolutely. Think, you know, especially with the situation with Ferguson. Last week when I saw all the unrest happening in Ferguson, after I got off the air, I monitored the television news until about 5 o'clock in the morning. And then Tuesday night did the same thing just to see what was happening. And it reminded me so much of the 60s. I had not seen something like that for a long time. And it just brought it all back. You know, I was very young in the 60s, but mm-hmm. I've been a news junkie all my life. You know, I pay attention mm-hmm. to politics and history. And there were so many parallels there. And I just thought, boy, we've got more work to do again. Here we go again. But it's got to be done.
Yeah, that's the key. I mean, a lot of young folks and a lot of guys, see, you got different black nationalist groups of one kind or another. They have the audacity. They don't realize what they're doing and saying, well, we don't be messing with that voting stuff.
Yeah, and you're an advocate for exactly that.
I said, in other words, you're going right down the area that the avaricious, right-wing, racist, corporate money rich wants you to go. And while they take over.
Exactly.
Let me understand that the Tea Party is financed by the Koch brothers and the billionaire club.
Yes.
All finance. I mean, these guys are on campuses. These Tea Party guys are on campus. Last time I was in Florida down there at Seminole University, mm-hmm. Tea Party came out 3 or 4 years ago, came out against me. When they got to the place with about 60 of the Tea Party guys with their little caps and green shirts and placards, et cetera, 600 people filled up the first 600 seats. The guys had to go out, the custodian, janitor guys or whatever, had to go and get 400 more seats. They had 1,000 people in audience. And I blew the Tea Party away. And then I got a standing ovation from everybody in the audience. And
that's
the 60
great.
Guys in the Tea Party had to walk out with their tail between their butts and the side door because they looked silly there trying to protest Bobby Seale speaking at the university. There,
well, exactly.
Know?
If they really understood what you stood for and the history of the Black Panther Party, they'd find, I think, that they're in a lot more agreement with you than they ever realize, and they just don't know the facts about this.
That's right. You're exactly right. What they do is they take marching orders from the corporate money rich.
Exactly. I want to ask you a quick question. I know Amale Yeshitela. He's the head of the African Solidarity Committee in the Uhuru movement, and he lives here in St. Petersburg. Has been very active since the 60s as well, like yourself. And I covered this last Tuesday, after the day after the Ferguson grand jury decision was announced. There was a demonstration here that shut down one of the intersections for about an hour. It was peaceful. There were no arrests. And then there was a review session done at the Uhuru House where they talked about what had happened and their response with Ferguson and talked about a lot of different perspectives. And Amalia Ishitella spoke. And what he said, I thought, was profound. Now, he's been an activist since the 60s. He's been jailed. He was the man who famously ripped down this very racist stereotype mural that used to be in St. Petersburg City Hall, ripped it down. It's a famous story in this area. And he said at that after meeting, after the demonstration, that he is more optimistic than he was even in the 60s, more optimistic than ever, that a lot of these problems are going to be solved in the next several years. I'm wondering, what is your response to that? What is your perspective? Because that's what he said, and I was rather surprised by that.
He's talking about problems being solved in the next several years. I have been advocating for the last 10 years, 10, 12 years, mm-hmm. in college campuses and lectures that I go to all over the place, that we have to have this broad, profound, progressive movement. Now, I'm going to go back to the legislatures. What do we have? In the House of Representatives, I think we have about 90, 95. Last I talked to Barbara Lee, Congresswoman Barbara Lee, 90, 95, on a low scale to a high scale, progressive voting Democrats. Now, the other Democrats, they don't know where they are, okay? But my point is, we need to triple the amount of progressive anybody, including key parties, progressive socialists,
Greens,
et cetera, in these political seats, even on the federal level, and especially start moving to see what we can get on the state level, and of course move in as fast as possible. Like Ferguson needs a slate of progressive politicians on the city council, righteous progressive ones. You know, I think there's one young lady who's a city council that I kept seeing on the news. She sounds very progressive. I'm just saying they just need a majority of that to make these things really change. And to say that this is going to happen all across the country, it's a lot of work and a lot of organizing.
Yes.
And a lot of concentration young folks can do. And they can do the same basic things we did, but in a different context in the present day. You see what I mean?
Yes.
That's what we did. I mean, with the Peace and Freedom Party, they wound up on the ballot in 28 states around the United States of America back in those days. And in effect, if you remember the right, at the convention, they made Elders Cleaver the candidate for president of the United States of America. They got votes, in 28 states. A few million votes when you added it all up.
Mm-hmm.
This is what happened. Now, that was just the beginning to lay down the foundation. You see what I mean?
Yes.
And the coalition politics, crossing those racial lines and finding different organizational groups who are all progressive in one content, in one contextual framework or another, that is what's going. That's what it's going to take to really change. That's my answer to that.
Interesting. I got one other question for you. I remember in the 60s, I saw this documentary film on the Weather Underground, and in that film, there is I believe it's Fred Hampton was interviewed briefly about the view of black movements about their attitude towards the Weather Underground. And from what I remember him saying is that they may be sincere, but they're you know, basically scatterbrained and stupid, and that they're doing things that make them vulnerable to the establishment, to the police and the military. And I'm wondering what your perspective is on that, because I wanted to ask that specific question. That was a very interesting segment that I saw.
I have a direct experience. Remember, I was on trial in Chicago, and I was in jail at the time.
Yes.
And Fred Hampton came to me. Elders Cleaver at the time was in exile, but we had a status in Algiers. We had an embassy status, the Black Panther Party International Section. And that's where Elders Cleaver was. Well, Elders Cleaver was sending messages back trying to tell the Chicago chapter of the Black Panther Party with Fred Hampton and others to go out and support the weatherman who were busting up our fronts of businesses and stuff up and down the downtown area, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And Fred had come in jail to see me. Well, I got him in jail to visit me through Bill Kunstler and others who told the judge that Bobby Seale needed to be able to talk to one of his potential witnesses. And, of course, he came in and let him talk. And what Fred Hampton told me, he says, Eldridge is telling us to go downtown to support the weather. I said, do not do it. I told him, I'm here, but I'm the chairman of the party. I'm telling you, I'm giving you a directive. Do not go down busting up a bunch of windows. I says, now, those young white kids is going to run up, and they're going to bust all these windows up and do whatever they're going to do with their little quasi-little riding down there. I says, but all those police are going to do is beat them with clubs. I said, but when you guys go down and you're black, they're going to shoot you down. They're going to shoot you down straight up.
Yes.
So do not go down there, et cetera. That's not a good tactic at this time. So that's my reaction to what that question you just asked me there.
Thank you. That was very interesting. I wanted to ask you that because I remember also in that documentary, they talk about the fact that the Weather Underground was harassed by the FBI and other law enforcement agencies, and yet
sure they were,
and yet they still saw in the way that they were treated that there was a certain amount of white privilege in the way they were treated by the police as opposed to how the black militants and progressives and organizers were. So even though they were on the same side and they were cooperating and had similar agendas, just the fact that those people were white, they were treated differently by the police in relationship to, in difference between the blacks and the whites. There was clear racist bias even among the policing of the leftist groups by the, by the FBI and other law enforcement agencies. I thought that was rather interesting observation as well.
Right, right.
So, yeah, it's interesting history. I just love it. We've got about 9 minutes left here, actually 7 minutes left with the closing of the program. We've got to get you on this program again so we can talk about this more. Would you be available sometime in January, possibly?
Say that again?
Would you be available sometime in January to come back on this program?
Sure. I mean, I got a lot of work I'm doing, and I'm moving around a lot,
Mm-hmm.
I guess the next thing I need to do is come back to Florida and speak at a college in the community area. Are you near the Tampa community area?
Absolutely. We're right
yes.
across the bridge.
I have spoke there before in a couple of colleges, but I haven't been there for more than 10 years, so there's a whole different student body. In some of the universities.
Oh, yeah. That's about time for you to come back.
Maybe
we can help with that.
I need to come down there. And I'm trying to go everywhere, there's letters sent out against me and others by the Koch brothers. I mean, really, the Koch brothers sent out thousands of letters back here 2 years ago.
Really?
The colleges and universities, and they're presenting their political science and their economic programs and offering money and grants for departments.
Indeed,
at the university,
yes.
To teach their things.
Florida State University, I believe, has taken that money for their economics department, I'm sad to say.
Yeah, that's sad to say. But at the same time, behind the scene, is stop any progressive speakers, including Bobby Seale. So, I mean, they want them to try to curtail them speaking on the campuses. So you have to understand what these guys are doing. The avaricious corporate money rich is using their money to squash, stop, et cetera, control, and give a direction for the people to be perpetually exploited. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And keep them ignorant.
Well, yeah. One of the problems we're having right now is this proposed fast-track legislation in terms of trade and the Trans-Pacific Partnership and then the Atlantic version of that as well. That is basically subjugation of the citizens of 11 countries by the corporate structure. They want basically corporations to outrank the government and have the citizens at the bottom. It's just
right.
Unbelievable. And that's exactly what you're talking about. That's what they're still trying to do it now.
Yes.
And I've been fighting against that for a year and a half or 2 years since the 2012 election cycle ended of stopping Fast Track and the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And so far, we've been successful at it.
I got to get some more information on this Fast Track stuff so mm-hmm. I can...
Well, you can go to citizen.org, go to the Public Citizen website. I know Lori Wallach and Elisa Simmons, who work for Public Citizen, and they are very knowledgeable on the subject. There's a lot of good information on that website. It's citizen.org.
Well, anybody out there who's listening on the radio station who got this information, et cetera, just send me a link to it. But my website is my name, Bobby Seale, BobbySeale in one word, .com. Just send me that kind of information, because I need to keep abreast, because I'm doing so many things, you know, sometimes. I get behind on specific stuff.
No, I know that feeling. Yeah, I know that feeling, that's for sure. But, yeah, that's one of the things that really relates directly to what you've been talking about here. And these things are an ongoing struggle. It's, you know, I'm reminded of that cliche, you know, that the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. Boy, if you look at the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and all the way up to the 2000s, that is very, very true. You've always got to be on guard because there's always somebody trying to pull something, you know? Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got coming to the last couple of minutes here. Any thoughts in summation of what we discussed tonight that you want to give to our audience before you come back on, possibly in January?
Well, I guess what I want to say is that this looks like we have another movement effort going on here. I love the fact that so many demonstrations have happened in 100 cities all across the country with respect, you know, to what's happening there in Ferguson. I have to reiterate that I want the young people down there to pull together and start organizing the community. And people tried to get me to come down there early. I didn't have a lot of money and resources to be running back and forth to resources. But I did see Al Sharpton, so I said, Al is good enough because I worked with Al before. But my point is I want to be able to come down there at some university where they invite me to speak to try to teach the youth down there, teach them the methods of find particulars and methodology of a grassroots community organizing, unifying political electoral community power, doing demographic campaigning for the objective of taking over those political seats down there, taking the power seats where they can change the racist laws, where they can change the laws about militarization of the police department, where they can change, you can change so much, you see what I mean? That's really what I have to say, you know, what I want to do, and hopefully I'll get a chance to get down there and really talk to the people about real change, you know what I mean?
Very good. Yes, and I'd like to say that we'd like to help in that effort. If there's anything we do to help you with that, we would love to do that.
Yeah, well, if you do that, that would be good, because that way I'd come in, et cetera, and we could do a great program. I could stay there a couple of days. You
know? Oh, that would be wonderful. Yeah, and we'll have to start working on that.
Bring materials, what have you, et cetera. I would like to do some real good workshops, you know. I mean,
yes,
if people would knew the ground campaign organizing methodology that I put together when I ran for mayor of Oakland, I mean, I wound up with I can bring some of my other people. I can do really big programs and bring some of my real right-hand and left-hand organizers.
Okay, well, very good. We'll talk more off the air about those kind of subjects and those kind of actions. And,
but demonstrations, sum up, are basically only the beginning. It's about building a community, and it's about doing grassroots organizing to take power.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, Bobby Seale, thank you so much for appearing on Spectrum 360. We've got to wrap the program up. It has been absolutely wonderful to have you here. It's an honor and a pleasure. We're looking forward to possibly getting you back on the program in January or whatever else we can organize for you to come to Florida. I'd be very interested in that. This has been Spectrum 360. Remember, next week we'll be speaking about Ronna Bazzini and campaign finance reform and many other things as well. And look for more videos from Spectrum 360 online. Check the Spectrum 360 Facebook website for that information. Thank you very much for being here tonight and participating in the program and listening.
Thank you.
Spectrum 360 is produced by Sunburst Media Productions and originates from St. Petersburg, Florida. Executive producer, host, audio engineer, and senior reporter, Mark Skogman. Associate producer, Terry Weeks. Spectrum 360 broadcasts live weekly on Mondays at 11 p.m. for 1 hour and online anytime via podcast. To access the podcast, go to www.facebook.com/Spectrum360 Radio Program and click on the program link. Or go to www.tantalk1340.com, click on podcasts, and click on Spectrum 360. Thank you to all our listeners and supporters and the staff of Spectrum 360. Listen next week for another interesting, informative, and entertaining Spectrum 360 radio program.
That's all, folks.